It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff's here, Stacy's here, lots to talk about, including the new European copyright laws. What happens when you turn off Google, Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft, and Apple in your life? And also the Eero acquisition. Is this good news or bad news for Eero customers? It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 495, recorded Wednesday, February 13th, 2019. Get yourself a Harvard man. This Week in Google is brought to you by WordPress. Turn your dreams into reality and launch your website at WordPress.com. Get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/Twig. And by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today for 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. Go to expressvpn.com/twig. And by Calm, the number one app to help you meditate, sleep, and relax. Start 2019 off right with Calm. For a limited time, get 25% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we talk about the latest from the Googleverse, which could be Google, but it could also be Facebook, Twitter, the state of journalism in the United States, and the Internet of Things. That's because this is a smart panel that could talk about a lot of things. We really basically focus on the world of the Internet. Stacey Higginbotham is here. She's our IoT guru, stacyonIoT.com. Longtime journalist at GigaOM and Fortune, and really just super smart. Great to have you, Stacey. Soon to be selling your home. Is this when is the last time we're going to see you in your studio?
Oh, not till like you'll see me here until May. We're moving the first week in June.
But you have listed it.
We have the photographer is actually here right now taking pictures.
That's cool. Nowadays, do they do 360?
You could be like that house that was where I was looking at the listing. Where it had an S&M thing, and you have a podcast studio.
I do not have a sex dungeon.
Well, I'm not saying you have that, but you have a podcast studio, which to some will be just as odd.
I think that's hysterical. They put the dungeon in the listing?
Yes.
Did you not see it?
No.
It was like 50 Shades of Maple Grove was the title of the listing. It was awesome.
Well, you know, you got to have an angle. Your angle will be it'll be a wired home, right? Smart home.
That is the angle, and that we have this awesome view, and I don't know. We already have our first person. We haven't even gone on the market, but someone's coming by tomorrow to look at it. So
we're going to use Twig to sell this house.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, once we put it on the market publicly, I'll send you guys a link, and you can be like,
I don't know. You're worried about weirdos coming by to say, oh, let's look at Stacy's house.
I don't know. How many weirdos listen to your show?
Lots.
I mean, you'll be able
ask
to find
Jeff
it
Jarvis. That's Jeff Jarvis.
That's a hell of an intro there.
The Leonard Tau. He's not one of them, but he's been the target. The Leonard Tau Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. He blogs at buzzmachine.com, at Jeff Jarvis on Twitter. Great to see you again, Jeff.
You?
Are you ensconced, surrounded by snow?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Beautiful, snowy New Jersey.
I had a record crop.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Of 23 wild turkeys just walk across the backyard.
Oh, that's fun. We have wild turkeys too.
Most we've ever had.
Yeah.
One side.
Never seen a wild turkey. Are they stupid?
Yeah.
They're stupid, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, they're not as stupid as non-wild turkeys.
Right.
The domestic variety really is not.
They really have issues.
As Trump would say, I don't want a caught turkey.
I don't want one that was caught. We it's kind of countryside, and there's a family of turkeys that wanders up and down, and they make their home in different yards. I haven't seen them in a couple of months, but it's kind of fun to have turkeys.
Fox.
We have fox.
I thought you lived in Westchester County, Jeff.
I live in Jersey.
He's in Jersey.
Oh. I had no idea.
No, I do not have an oil refinery near me.
This is a common misconception about New Jersey. People think of it as the part of New Jersey that's just over the river from New York City as
down
New Jersey.
Turnpike, right.
They've seen The Sopranos.
Oh. They come. You see them?
Here come the turkeys. Oh, my God. There they are.
Oh,
that's them.
Now I've seen a wild turkey.
Yeah. It looks just like the one on the label.
That's what I was just about
to say. Look how big they are.
Yeah, they're fattened up for...
Can you kill them?
Oh.
Is that allowed?
I'm sure it's allowed.
Well, no, in Texas, we have deer everywhere, but you can't shoot them.
In season, you can shoot them. I'm sure.
You can shoot them in season if you have a permit, but you can't just shoot them in season with a permit, like on our common area.
I thought you could shoot anything in Texas. I thought that was just the thing.
No, you can't. That was surprising.
Democrats in Texas.
Yeah, that's Austin for you. I'll tell you. That's nice. That's pretty. What a pretty kind of sight out your window, Jeff.
Yeah.
For those of us,
Stacy, I live like 3 miles from Trump's golf course.
Oh, are you there often protesting?
I have gone there. I've done that.
Bedminster,
yes.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, fancy. I can already tell you that's fancy. It sounds so fancy.
I live in Bedminster. It's just up the road from...
It was until he moved in. There were the neighborhood. Sorry, Leo. Don't at Leo. You can't at Leo.
Actually, my Twitter account and Facebook account are active because I have to periodically... activate them. I activate them and forgot to deactivate them. But that's
okay.
Should I start with one? Danger, 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 danger. Europe, please.
What happens?
Bat signals 11 and 13 are back on. Julia Reda, the green member of the European Parliament, describes them. And it is harrowing. I can't find this piece. Yes. She has quick bullet points, but it's harrowing how this ruins the internet. This is SOPA PIPA gone nuclear.
So let's talk about it. Start with 11. What is 11? And by the way, this is articles in what?
Articles in a new copyright, in a cross-European copyright, because now copyright is done by country, basically. Okay. This is an effort to kind of and a lot of people, including the platforms, welcomed the idea of a single market view. Where did I put it on the rundown? I can't find it.
Well, I have it in front of me.
Well, I know what I was going to have it too, so I can.
Julia Reda.eu.
Second from the bottom in other.
For 2 years, we've debated different drafts and versions of the controversial Articles 11 and 13, but now there is no more ambiguity. The law will fundamentally change the internet as we know it. Now, by the way, we should say Julia is dead set against it. If it's adopted in the upcoming final vote, we could still prevent that. But here's the final text. So should we start with 11 or 13?
Sure, 11. So 11 is a so-called link tax. So reproducing more than single words or very short extracts will require a license.
This is aimed at Google.
That means you or me.
This is aimed at Google search, though, the snippets that they put in the search results.
Yeah, but this, they can't just pass a law against Google, so they pass it against every user. So every time you want to quote someone and quote it at length and say something about it, which we would call free speech, fair comment, good common sense, and liberal democracy, you won't be able to do it. You will have to go and get a license.
Yeah, that's how blogging started. That's what blogging was.
Yeah.
I saw this text. I think this.
Yeah. Right. Look at if you want a sample of what that looks like. Look at daringfireball.net, John Gruber's blog, which it's always extensive comments from another story that he then comments on. This is very traditional style blogging.
In Europe
will be illegal without a license.
No exceptions are made even for services run by individuals, read bloggers, small companies, nonprofits.
No.
So that kills free speech on the net. It kills the ability to talk about something. It kills the ability to quote something. It kills the essence of what journalists do all the time.
Isn't this against the interests of the publishers? Don't these quotes help drive traffic?
No, because they think this is the, I'm going to say it. The origins of this is the Leistungsschutzrecht.
Yeah. So I look at, for instance, I look at a John Gruber post. He's quoting John Pachkowski for BuzzFeed. He doesn't even have any commentary on it. But then there's a link that I would then click.
They consider the publishers, starting with Springer and Borda, consider that theft.
Oh,
that's weird. Because if you got on Gruber's site, you got a gajillion page views from it.
Absolutely. But they want to go out. This is how they. It's not just that they want them to stop that. They want to put them in a legal bind that says, this means you're stealing from us and you should give us money. I mean, witness, we'll get to Gavin Newsom in a little bit. Gavin Newsom is talking about, you know, a digital...
The governor of California.
Yeah, sorry, governor of California, where the platforms owe everybody everything just because they make money. And full disclosure here, I raised money from Facebook for my school. I'm independent of Facebook. I received no money personally from any of the platforms. I do own stock in Google and Amazon. End of disclosure. Thank you very much. Thank you for reminding me of doing that last week, Stacey. This kills the net. This kills
Is their plan, is Axel Springer's plan, they'll still push published links, but they'll give us some money for doing that.
That was the hope. But what happened in the German law was that Google said, fine, then we're not going to license from you. We'll stop linking to you. And the publishers all came back on their knees saying, oh, please, okay, we'll say okay, and link. Then in Spain, the same law was passed, but there was no exception allowed. You couldn't give permission for it to happen. You had to have a license arrangement, and that's why Google pulled Google News out of Spain. Google has threatened to at least pull Google News out of Europe and has shown a version of what Google would look like without under this law.
So Beatmaster, who's a Swiss in our chat room, and so the Swiss are very neutral, says, all right, let's pose the opposite argument. If people read the headlines or even read a... If people read a snippet, they're not going to click the link because they're going to get the gist of the article and move on.
I've heard that argument for a long time, believe me.
Some people do.
But also lots of – A, there's no way to measure. You're proving a negative. B, you see what I mean by that, is that how many people would have gone to it. Oh, that story bores me. I read the headline. I'm glad I avoided it. Thank you very much. Right? B,
that's
how
my
many
favorite,
discover it?
By the way, my favorite Twitter account is Saved You a Click.
Yeah.
Where the headline poses a question but doesn't give you the answer, so you have to click the link. And the Saved You a Click just gives you the answer.
Answer, right. Because the business model here is to dragoon you into clicking.
They're out of business, by the way.
The second part is that... how many articles are discovered because of these links that you would never have seen? So, by the way, Google and Facebook are now helping publishers with their subscription plans, which I think is also doomed, but that's another story. And they're trying to help drive traffic down the funnel to these publishers. So this is a vindictive act of corporate protectionism.
Okay, so you could argue that's why these corporate interests wanted it, but if the EU passes it, that's not a vindictive act. That's because the EU Parliament said,
it's a good idea. They use their political clout. They use their political clout.
Would this be illegal? So here's the website, or the Twitter feed, Saved You a Click. The Wall Street Journal, Coke launches first new flavor in over a decade. Saved You a Click says orange vanilla, because that's all you really want to know from that story. So is that a snippet? Yes, right? That's the headline.
But the problem in the German law is they never define snippet. They probably haven't defined. I haven't seen here yet what they define. There's not a magic number of words. Same as fair comment. There is no definition of fair comment because it depends upon the
reproducing context. More than single words or very short extracts, but we don't know what very short means.
We don't know what very short is.
So actually what Google's doing could actually be a very short extract.
So you'll get to a search and you'll have no idea what you're looking at. I'm trying to find the thing that Google put up about 2 weeks ago, trying to show what it would look like, but I can't find it.
So, all right. I mean, this seems kind of dumb, but we've also set our hair on fire over GDPR and other things, and they've kind of not been a bad thing. Maybe this will be a good thing.
Oh, gee, don't get me started on that.
Like, Leo, why are you poking the bear?
And honestly, while you could make, I mean, there's no privacy purpose for this. This doesn't benefit end users at all. In fact, if anything, it disadvantages end users.
Exactly.
This is clearly to protect
publishers.
So at the
bottom of the link I just put up, let's see, Google put up something that never mind.
I was going to say, so what about 13? At the risk of getting bogged down in one of these, let's go to the next one.
Let's go to 13, which is really a problem as well. So 13, where are you, Ms. Rada, is going to screw you, Leo, if you ever quote anything in audio or video. It requires commercial sites to buy licenses to anything that users may possibly upload.
What?
That was this the right reaction.
This sounds great until we get like microtransactions, and then it might be, you know, doable. But this is not, I mean, that's not even something you couldn't even that. Set up a bureau for that if you were a publication. Like, even if I wanted to pay you 10 cents to quote you.
So we would so I think that sounds like, okay, in our case, no one could listen to our shows in the EU. Right?
Because if you might quote something.
We'd be uploading in a podcast. We just did it a bunch of times. Content from other people's sites. We're
but
showing them.
Couldn't
we're talking about
pull
them.
From EU publications, right?
Buy licenses for anything that
you. No, you just can't visit Paris anymore. You'll get arrested.
So, I mean, am I correct? Is that a correct interpretation? If this passes,
well, it depends. We do whole shows where we don't actually show anything.
But I don't want a chilling effect. I mean, already in this show, we're 15 minutes in, and I've showed John Gruber's website.
Yep.
I've showed the Wall Street Journal. I've showed people's Twitter feeds.
And with every show that we publish a list of all the links, all the stories we referred to.
The show notes.
There's like 20 stories in every episode that we
Publish the link alone, but what's the link text?
We can't put any text next to it if it's a snippet or an extract.
Surely you could put the headline.
I could put we could put a description of what the link leads to. I don't think that – well, we don't know. But I'm more concerned so I'm showing John Gruber's website. This is copyrighted material in the United States. Is it only material that's copyrighted in the EU?
I don't know. That's a good question. But the next piece is, let's say somebody in your chat room, Leo, it's your chat room, puts up a big block quote from something.
Happens all the time.
You're liable. You're liable.
Right. That's a bigger one.
Shut off chat. Sorry, chatters. Bye.
So the upshot of this, by the way, how does Julia say this is going to pass?
Oh, yeah. As of now, I mean, she's calling bat signals. This is Sopapipa time across Europe. This is fight it time. So she's trying to fight hard.
Writes, the history of this law is a shameful one. From the very beginning, the purpose of Articles 11 and 13 was never to solve clearly defined issues in copyright law with well-assessed measures, but to serve powerful special interests. I think you can argue that pretty much all the copyright laws in all the world are to serve special interests, but all right, with hardly any concern for the collateral damage caused. The collateral damage in this case would be I would have to look at you when you come into the chat room and block you if you're in the EU, right? I mean, this doesn't affect...
Probably. You would have to tell all of us we can't show anything.
I'm not going to do that.
From anyone.
I'm not going to do that. We can't do that. That would that's a chilling effect that I'm not willing to accept.
Right. So now imagine you are a European Leo, the classy cultured Leo Laporte, the one with a beret, true to his French name. Uh-huh. So your cousin Leon Laporte is doing a podcast in France. How does he operate? He has to say, I can do nothing but make my own stuff. I can't quote anyone. I can't show anything.
Well, you could presumably do, as you pointed out, a lot of what we do, which is, did you see this? And here's a problem. I mean, we could talk about story. It's actually sad because one of the things I try to do when we talk about a story is refer to the sourcing reporter publication. So we would have to just stop doing that. We'd have to just say,
I start a rant against something and Stacey says, no, Jeff, you're wrong. You're saying the wrong thing. Let me quote what that person actually says. Leo says, shut up, Stacey.
Oh, you know, well, in one sense, it would make you do a lot of reporting. I mean, as a old school journalist who actually had to call people as opposed to just like lift stuff from press releases and Twitter accounts, you'd just be like, hello. I mean, it'd be a pain in the butt.
Well, but everything individually, everything would have to be doing reportage based. And that means it eliminates commentary.
And it eliminates fact checking. Look at it that way. I want to quote this thing and say why it's wrong. I can't quote what I'm fact checking.
Snopes doesn't work in that.
Snopes.
Of course, we know Snopes is fake news now, so it's okay. here's an example.
Friends at Snopes.
We've been quoting Julia Rada and her blog. We couldn't do that anymore.
This is so patently against any ethic
speech. So would that also turn people who write stuff
screw
into...
Screw you! Can I even wear a beret? Is that even allowed?
If I did reporting, would I have to open a licensing division to people quote my stuff? No, that would be hard.
Right.
Yes, it would be.
And in fact, if you're Julia Raya, you want us to quote you.
Yeah, you wouldn't get... You'd lose all this traffic, all this...
It puts Stacey on IoT out of business.
Yeah.
Now,
but it keeps Springer in business.
Let's be clear. This is only in the EU. So the defense for Americans and other countries is just say, well, as by the way, many newspapers already do with GDPR, you just block EU readers, listeners. They can't come in the chat room.
As various publishers blocked EU readers because of GDPR.
Would we get 10,000. Would we get sued by somebody in the EU for doing this in the United States? Mm-hmm.
If it were visible to somebody in the EU, yes.
So we just have to work very hard to keep people in the EU from seeing our forbidden content.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're taking this to the extreme, but this is an extreme measure. And
P.S. Chops in the chat room. This all feels like an overreaction, as if the EU hasn't considered all these possibilities.
Oh, sorry. Me no. And they've done it, and Julia Raya and others have been fighting hard, and they won, and then the powerful lobbyists of publishing and Hollywood, the version of European, come back, and the news publishers go for 11, and the entertainment people go for 13, and we're back in with SOPA people.
And here's what your Google News would look like if Article 11 passes. No pictures. No text, just a link.
But you can link.
Just a link to the Liverpool Echo.
So for those of you listening, it just has a blank box on Liverpool Echo 4 hours ago. That's all it says.
Doesn't say what's in it. Doesn't say why you should go there. Doesn't say anything. Because they can't. That's ridiculous.
And search, too. This is Google News. Search.
Okay. So we should just ignore this.
No. Everybody, if you know anybody in Europe, have them write to legislators.
Right now, you need everybody listening. 30% of our audience is overseas.
I run into people in countries around the world who, because of this show, who recognize me on the street in Munich.
So please, if you are in the EU, write your representatives and say and point out to them. Maybe they haven't considered the impact of this.
You can look up your representative's voting behavior at saveyourinternet.eu.
You know, I have to say, this is a trend, global trend also. This is not restricted to the EU. This is what, you know, the big copyright holders would like. They think, I don't think they realize the consequences of this, otherwise they wouldn't like it. But, you know, and this is what Cory Doctorow and others have been inveighing against the World Intellectual Property Organization. Which and the DMCA, which undermined all of those fair use. There's no fair use in the DMCA. Fortunately, nobody seems to have enforced it. But it's still bad policy to pass laws as hoping nobody will enforce them. So go ahead.
Thank you for allowing me to do the.
Yeah. This is hair on fire or beret on fire in my case.
Sacre bleu!
Zut alors! So at some point, you're going to have mass disobedience. That's what happened.
Yeah.
When laws get passed that are untenable, people just don't obey them.
Hank Green did a great video explaining to all their listeners, why his brother John's video about, I think it was European football, was taken down. And he went through the whole process. Very, very good explainer video. I'll find it and send it to you. About how the process works now with YouTube. And he says, you know, it basically kind of works, but we all violate the law. And he says that it's in the interest of those we violate against to keep it up and get money from it and to get promotion from it. And we all know this. And so nobody's really following the law. And it's all absurd because the law is absurd.
I thought the United States was the only province of big money influencing politics.
Oh, no. Here we go. I found it. It's a very good video.
Don't they have campaign finance reform in Europe?
Oops.
Well, you playing it's not going to do us any good at all.
Well, I tried to put it up here.
Flip your screen around. Hold on.
Okay, there you go. You got it.
It's an excellent video. But dare I play it? I'm worried about a takedown now.
Yeah, wouldn't it be funny if Hank did a takedown against you?
Yeah, for complaining
for
about
his copyright video.
Yeah, here, let's.
It was a blatant violation of copyright. I just stole it. But somehow, that's okay. We live in a brave new copyright world, and the solutions really aren't legal anymore. They're technological. So for the people out there who are making content and are confused about copyright, this is the bizarre state of intellectual property.
Okay, I'll just leave this as an exercise for the viewer or listener.
Yes, exactly. But it's very good. Yeah. It's excellent.
It's on YouTube, The Bizarre State of Copyright. Cool. I kind of blame Zay Frank for the bizarre state of YouTube video. Incidentally.
Jump cuts.
It was Zay Frank who many years ago started this whole thing of never blinking and then just random cuts in your video. And clearly Hank was heavily influenced by Zay Frank.
Everyone was.
Except me. We were talking earlier before the show. We could cut it way down. We were talking before the show about different styles of podcasting and video casting and stuff, and how mine is influenced pretty much by just live radio, because that's where this really is, a live radio show, and how inconsistent that is with the trendy, you know, NPR style that the Gimlet espouses, or the YouTube styles. There are various YouTube styles, but they all kind of owe a debt to Zay Frank.
Were you to try a different style, what would it be?
I wouldn't even know how to start. I mean, that's technically, I know what to do. We can technically do that.
I would like everything to be shot in black and white. I need a fog machine in the background.
Oh.
And I need us all to today.
We should do noir. We should pretend.
I can smoke our cigarettes.
It would work with my beret. Or a fedora. I have fedoras.
Did you ever smoke,
like,
Stacey?
Yeah. Oh, well, there we go.
Welcome to this week. In Google,
Twig Noir.
Twig Noir. We are joined today by the very attractive Jeff Jarvis.
You know, I actually look okay in black and white. Yes. I don't look freaky.
And
I actually think your hair is glowing.
We don't know why he looks nuclear power plant where the
Chernobyl Jeff.
The meltdown has begun, but that is just the way it is. On my other hand is the very liberal Stacey Higginbotham.
Oh, you have to call me a
Actually,
dame.
She's a dame. And how do you say Higginbotham with a French accent?
Higginbotham. She has the long jam and a beautiful fiery temper. I love it.
I like how you're walking that line, Leo. You're like, I am very.
I'm really nervous about.
I know. I can.
I don't want to go over the line here with Stacey because she could hit me, even though she's thousands of miles away. I just fear her. I'm concerned, Jeff, but it seems so absurd. I feel like, how could this possibly?
This law
pass?
Has been, but the thing is, yeah. When Spain did the link tax. Hurt the publishers. It was meant to help. It's corporate protectionism. I did a presentation, and I'm not going to bore you with it now, but I went through every single one of the major pieces of European regulation, and everyone had an unintended consequence, which in the end gives the platforms more power.
Yeah.
I mean, even Google and Facebook, as much as this would hurt them, they're in better shape to weather it than anybody else.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the people who really get hurt are the small podcasters, bloggers.
Oh, yeah.
The John Groupers of the world, the Twits of the world, those are the people we just would have to turn off our European faucet. I don't want to do that.
Nope.
What if we do, now I know, Stacey, you don't think much of Ben Longstaff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's talk about this dude.
That was a little sotto voce warning there. But
what if we do what Ben says and just say, no. We're not going to pay your fines. He says Google could just say we'll turn off service to the EU. I don't want to turn off service to the podcast to the EU. What if I just say, no, I'm not going to pay your fine and go come and get me? Could they come and get me? Could the European police break into our studios and drag me off?
No. I mean, they would have to file. I mean, the process of arresting you would be, boom, they're going to file charges against you. They have to get an extradition.
It's not it's civil, though. It's not even criminal, right? It's civil. So they would have to sue me in court. I would not show up. They'd fine me in absentia. They'd say we want $1 billion in €1 billion from you.
And well, I'd say, okay, so you go on your next river cruise with your charming and wonderful wife.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
What happens when you land there?
I don't know. I'd be a cause célèbre. I wear my beret. They take me. I go like this. Take me to jail.
French will complain that you made fun of them. Then now you're really doomed.
Leo Laporte, what is his name he wears? Who is he pretending to be?
So they're actually, Longstreet says that France is actually trying to introduce a tax just for Google, Apple, Facebook, and Amazon, a GAFA tax. Now, I guess Google could walk away from a country. They don't want to. They walked away from China.
They certainly don't want to, no.
Yeah, and they walked away from China because of being asked to censor, which is against its principles.
Right.
Right.
Walking away because of, I mean, I guess if Google wants to plainly state for everyone that collecting people's data forever and keeping it for whatever it wants to use it for is one of their principles, which it is, then, you know, Stacey, that would be a reason to walk away from. It is clearly one of their economic raison d'être.
What if
I am just saying that it is, they do want to collect information about people. They want to collect information.
Absolutely. They
want to
serve
about
people. Unlike mass media, they want to serve people as individuals.
We can disagree about their motives. That's fine. But what if the EU at some point decides to fine Google the maximum that they can fine them? Which
so
is
could Google says, I will leave.
I'm not giving you $4 billion, dude.
If they shut down Google,
well, look, ask Kashmir Hill. I mean, if you really got tough and Google shut down for a day,
it wouldn't be good. It'd actually be worse in France than it is here in the United States. French,
that is
Google
not
is more
how
of a
company
monopoly.
Wants to behave. I mean, because France is still a democratic institution. So if Google were to like basically take all its toys and go home, yes, people would be sad and say to their government, how dare you do that to Google? But the rest of us would look at Google and be like, dude, that was a jerk move. You should probably negotiate over this.
No. I don't think so. I think we'd wave flags and say, bravo, Google. If France fined Google the full 4% of their annual revenue, which would be $4.4 billion.
For a GDPR violation?
And Google said, yes. Google said, we're not going to pay it. We only make $2.2 billion a year from France in advertising revenue. We'll just say, fine, we turn you off. You don't like it, we'll turn you off.
It is a law that was passed by several, I don't know how many countries are now in the EU. This is
one fewer
company.
Soon.
A company cannot flout the rules of a democratically elected society and pretend to be not evil.
Okay.
And I know.
So let's say they don't flout. Let's say they say, all right, we're going to give you $4.5 billion, but bye-bye. That's not flouting. That's paying the fine and then saying we're not going to do business here anymore. What if they did that?
Because of your law.
Then that's fine. That's fine. But for Google,
so they pay the fine. They can afford it. They pay the fine.
You have to follow the laws of countries that are not evil.
I agree. So that's what we're talking about right now, with something that's about to become a law that is really untenable.
Is evil.
Yeah.
I know you would. I mean, I don't like it, but.
Well, it's just not the right way to pursue your goals.
I mean, they could, the idea that Google would go straight to being like, it's not worth it. You don't generate. Google, of course, would fight it in court. That's the way these.
Yes, that's what's happening right now.
With rules.
Yeah, that's what's happening right now.
So to just like, to basically say, screw you in the process of law that we've all lived under for, you know, the last 150 years would be. That's a dickish move.
No, you're absolutely right. So they fight in court. If they lose in court, they pay the fine, and then they say, but I'm sorry, we're not going to pay it again. So goodbye.
Then they're left only in the EU, in the UK when it's left to the EU. But then they leave the UK because of the Cairncross review, which proposes that the government should tell Google and Facebook to correct things on their platforms.
Yeah. So ultimately, it's a shrinking world if you start leaving. There's not a lot of places. In fact, the U.S., you just mentioned Gavin Newsom and the California privacy law. They might have to leave state by state.
I'm going to say it. Stacey, get ready. I'm going to say it.
Hey,
it's moral panic happening. There's this constant, oh my God, the internet is ruining everything, and it's BS.
I'll tell you though, Jeff, it's a mistake to conflate GDPR with Articles 11, 13. I think it's appropriate to ask for privacy.
Yeah. And I think it's just bad. I think it's a well-intentioned, badly written law, GDPR. 11 and 13 are ill-intentioned and horribly written law.
Yeah, and I don't think you should have the fight on two fronts, because that's going to be tough.
Yeah, and I think, Jeff, conflating the internet with the giant companies that currently dominate the internet is probably a conflation we should avoid too.
Well, except, Stacey, I'm prevented as a blogger from doing what I've done since 2001. So I'm the internet, and
no, but that's why I say don't mix this new copyright law with GDPR. GDPR companies like mine can adhere to, can continue to do our business. We're not surveillance based, and so GDPR is not a problem for a lot of the internet.
I can criticize both laws.
Yeah, but it'd be be careful.
Don't lump them together.
Yeah, because if you lump them, because on the other hand, this new copyright law would put all of us out of business in the EU. It would put my show out of business. It would put your show out of business. It would put your blog out of business. Or we would have to be something very different. So, yes, there's harm to Google there, too. But there's also harm. That, I think, Stacey, it'd be fair to say that law is anti-internet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not. We're not talking about that law.
Yeah. GDPR is different.
And that's not what this dude is talking about when he's saying we're not.
No, but it, but that same issue is going to come up in other contexts too. I mean, at this point,
if these laws get passed, then, you know, again, there are processes that we generally follow when we disagree with democratically created laws. I mean,
it's not come to civil disobedience yet.
Yeah. And civil disobedience by companies, I look heavily askance at. They're not in it to make our country or our laws better. They're in it for themselves.
Stacey, lots of countries put up black pages on their websites and kind of shut off their content for a day as a protest. You didn't object to that.
I didn't object to that. And that was a one-day thing that's not saying I'm taking all my toys and going home. That is an example before a law is even passed to say, hey, this is what it's going to look like.
Yeah, and that's, I agree. I think Google will act as an adult, not as a child.
Oh, yeah, they will.
Not as a child.
But I wouldn't. I think in the privacy of their wonderful cafeteria, I think they're due some childish stomping their feet.
Well, heck, I do that after this show, Jeff. Sometimes I'm like, oh, Jarvis and his moral panic.
Hey.
And I'm sure you're like, oh, Stacey, don't you recognize that free speech is important?
Jamais, Stacey. Jamais.
No.
Jamais.
No.
All right, let's take a break. I'm gonna come back to the United States. Enough of these freedom fries, and talk about WordPress.com. That's where I make my home on the net. I love WordPress.com, and I have long-standing relationship with WordPress.com. I started using WordPress when Matt Mullenweg first published it way back when, because I thought this is a great way to make a website. And of course, very quickly I learned that buying my own hosting machine, licensing it, downloading WordPress, installing it, managing it, and running it was not really why I was creating a website. I mean, it's good for me because I need to learn all this stuff, but then I said, but now I want to post content, I'm going to WordPress.com. WordPress.com does all the nitty-gritty. They host it, they do all the upgrades, they keep all the security patched, just so you could focus on what you care about, your website. And then they have the tools to make it easy. You don't have to be a CSS or an HTML expert to use WordPress.com. I've been on WordPress.com for 12 years, and I love it. For one thing, if you ever have a question, they have 24-hour-a-day support. including weekends, from actual WordPress experts. So they can really help you. I even asked them, you know, what template should I use? What do you like? Here's what I want to do. That was great. I mean, I loved it that they could say, yeah, you should probably, in fact, they told me, you should probably use 2016. That's looks like a good site for you, a good template for you. And they were right. That's what I'm using right now. You can see my WordPress site at leolaporte.com. WordPress was started so that anyone could publish their ideas, and they're doing it. They are doing it. Now, 33% of the internet runs on WordPress. That's one-third. 33% of the internet is on WordPress. That's amazing. The WordPress platform is easy, and it's free to start, but it'll give you room to grow. There are no two-week trials, no hidden fees. And most importantly, you own your content. Everybody, you can have a Facebook page. You can have a Twitter feed. If you're a business, you should have those. But that can't be your only home on the web. You need a place you own, a place to put your content, your pictures, your text, your video, your audio, somewhere to put your content that you own. You can upload and download from WordPress.com. It's yours. That's so important. Millions of people use WordPress.com every day to turn their dreams into reality. I hope you will, too. Join us. Go to WordPress.com/twig. Right now, 15% off any new plan purchase. That's a great way to start. WordPress.com/twig. I know maybe you haven't done this because you're worried how complicated it is. It's not. You don't have to be technical. It's easy.
I can do it.
If Jeff can do it.
You can do it.
WordPress.com/twig. We're big fans. Is Buzz Machine a WordPress site?
Oh, yeah. And I have help from son Jake, but now I'm on Gutenberg.
Oh, the new editor. How do you like
that? The new editor. I like it. It took me about 20 minutes.
I know you like the name.
How are they thinking here? Of course I love the name. And it's very, very easy to work with. And everything is a block. And when you put up a new block, it can be text, a headline, a photo, and anything.
I think what you get it.
Very logical.
It's very powerful.
Well, exactly. Yeah. It took me a little bit to suss out. Like literally 10 minutes to suss out, well, how does this work? But I sussed it out. I didn't have to read any manuals or any of that old-fashioned stuff.
And I like you use, you know, the various features of WordPress to like the social sharing buttons. You've got your tweets right there. I do the same thing. You've got your books there. Mm-hmm. These sidebars are really powerful too. Good. Nice. And, you know, WordPress focuses on content, and I think that's important for you. It's certainly important for me.
I have 3 WordPress blogs.
3? Okay. Overachiever, Stacy.
Maybe I have more. What? I don't really know.
Trying to one-up us boys.
They're so easy to
it's
set
easy.
Up. You just,
right. just start
throw it.
It
out there.
Yeah. I think that's what I love about the free and open web, and that's why I really like you, Jeff. It hurts me. It literally physically pains me when people threaten this because it's been such an amazing democratizing force. And I know there's bad stuff, but that's the world. The internet is, we can't ever forget what an incredible transformation the internet has made to the
Amen.
World. Yeah. And the free and open web is really what it's all about.
Jeff, you should have a shirt that says the open web is my religion. That is what you need.
That's true. I'll wear that shirt.
See, a lot of people, just like I already have it.
What does his shirt say? Dissent is patriotic. That is true as well.
That is also true. Big sighs. I know, I'm like sitting here going, where is my drink?
Yeah, I know.
I need a drink and a donut.
If
What's
you were
happening?
Here, you could have a drink.
Oh, I can text down and get a drink.
Oh, okay. You could text. You could text for beverages and a donut.
Yes. Wow. I can't text for a donut. That
drinks and a
unfortunately.
Donut on the way up.
That would be awesome.
Jeff, you started this. What else do you want to talk about?
I started
about?
That. So Stacey, you can pick the next one.
Ooh.
I was just looking through trying to think what else I wanted to talk about here.
I like Google Fiber, but there's not a lot really to discuss there.
Oh, I know what I want from you, Stacey. Oh. Ooh, I know what I want you to talk about.
Oh, my goodness. Tell me.
Amazon buying Eero.
Oh, Eero, yes.
I didn't think about that.
That's a big story.
And I even put it in the show notes.
Are you a thumbs up or thumbs down on that? Now, we should say Eero was a sponsor. And I use the past tense. They still are, in theory. But every time Amazon buys one of our sponsors, they seem to lose
interest
in podcasts. To my knowledge, Amazon's never bought podcast advertising. Audible was the first, and I think they still do some podcast advertising, but not on our network. Ring, same thing. They paid $1 billion for Ring. We don't know how much they paid for Eero. Eero, if you don't remember, is the mesh networking solution we all like a lot.
I have them. They're running right now.
Yeah, they're great. Me too. I installed them at my mom's too because I can manage your network from here. So the concern some people raise is that, well, now Amazon just going to use this as one more way to spy on us. For instance, well, but wait, Jeff, your Eero knows every device in your house that's connected to the internet by name and MAC address.
Well, and because it's a router, it also knows exactly where you are on the internet.
Yeah. It knows when people come and go because they join the router or they leave the router. So it knows when you get home, it knows when your kids get home, knows when you leave
it
the house.
It also knows when you're naughty and nice.
It knows how your devices communicate to the internet and where they communicate to. So I'll show, I mean, like if I go into my Eero app, I can see, for example, right now, what do I see? Oh, I can see everybody's in my house, but I can also see, I'm looking at my devices and I can see which ones are idle and which are communicating.
Yep.
And right now, like, dude, for some reason, my sink is talking to the internet. I don't know why.
But that's interesting information that, you know, certainly Amazon.
I'm like, sink, what the heck? Actually, if I see that for enough time, I'm like, hey, that's weird behavior from my sink. I need to investigate, like, you know, I have Eero Plus.
Watch out, sink, she's coming.
By the way, yeah, I have Eero Plus too. That's the $99 a year add-on that gives you a lot of features. Well worth it, I think. So
fine. So there's the paranoid rant about the big company, but in terms of functionality or benefit,
there's lots of synergy too.
Okay, well, hold on. Let's hold the phone because Jeff, you did ask me my opinion, and I'm going to give it to you.
Yes, I did.
This is a data story. This is a data story in two different ways. One, it's a story about how Amazon has access to amazing data from what people are buying and how successful those purchases are to make decisions about what it should buy. So that's data story number one. Amazon has access to data that a lot of times people pay investment banks and consulting firms to find out in terms of market share and that sort of thing. And Amazon even referenced Eero's 4.6 star rating in their press release. So that's one.
Hold on right there, Stacey.
Okay.
I agree. I'm just curious what specifically, presuming Amazon is going to follow GDPR, is going to follow privacy things, what does it learn that it didn't know already because you buy everything you buy from Amazon?
Oh, no. That's not nefarious. I say this is genius. This is a point in Amazon's favor. I'm just pointing it out because a lot of people, mm-hmm. and this is actually how Amazon has worked for now, I guess, over a decade, because with Amazon Web Services, it has done this for a while where it's like, hey, what services are getting big on our platform? What API calls are we seeing? And it uses that to determine what sort of features it should launch next or if it should buy a company. So just by virtue of being a platform of its size, Amazon gets a lot of competitive information about other companies. And I don't think people understand how that helps it be successful, but this is a really good example of how that helps. So that's one side. The second data sharing thing is by buying Eero, it does get access to a lot of information about devices on a person's network, where a person goes on the network. And
as any router Amazon, would.
As any router would. And I want to be clear.
Eero has, in my opinion, very good privacy policy. It was absolutely something I read before I bought an Eero. And everybody should read that. And that's the question.
More important because they had all this added functionality, right?
So here's where we should get really clear about what we're talking about and what's scary, because I think it's really important. Amazon has first, or Eero has first off said, okay, our existing privacy policy stays the same. So we do collect information about what devices are on your network, and we use that information in aggregate and anonymized to talk about things. So in some ways, that's good for Amazon because it gets even if I don't buy devices from Amazon, Amazon gets that same insight into devices that are hot by virtue of seeing the percentage of them out in the wild. So that's good for Amazon's future business goals,
right? They know what's hooked into your Wi-Fi and what you use most.
Right.
Okay.
So even if I didn't buy it from them. So that's interesting. The other thing is Amazon says in all of its data gathering activities about like my smart light bulbs and whatnot, because I'm sure you guys saw the Bloomberg story where it's asking smart device vendors to basically share information about when things are turned off and on and when they're used, even if they're not being activated through the Echo. So people got up in arms about that. I am kind of neutral about that, and I'll say why. Amazon is not using this for advertising. They're very clear about that. They may one day, and that would be a problem. But today they use it to provide context and build algorithms that can anticipate your wants and needs, which is what everyone says they want from a smart home. And I think here's where we get into a core issue that I think is going to be, we're talking about privacy right now, like it's the defining issue of the current era. I think what the real defining issue is going to be is trust and transparency, because these companies do have this data. And if they use that data to make better products or to do things for you, a lot of people are okay giving that data up. If they use that data to like manipulate you into buying crap you don't need, people are going to be rightly pissed about it. So I wanted to make those subtleties clear, because I have a problem with certain kinds of data sharing, but not with others. And so I don't want you to just shout techno panic at me, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I got it. No, I'm right. I'm right. You're right.
The issue is also...
I'm good. You're right. I meant to say.
People say, well, what, Eero knew this. Why do you care that Amazon now knows this? The issue is not so much that Eero knows it, is that Amazon can collect a bigger and bigger pile of data about you. And by connecting the dots in the variety of data it has about you, it really knows perhaps more than you even realize about you and what you're up to.
And it does. And as it starts launching things like a health service, and what I'm really interested in is, as these companies establish these huge data troves, where are the firewalls between different data things? And what aspects of what data stores are getting shared with what partners? Because I think I don't want my health insurance company knowing if I have like a connected medical device that my doctor hasn't prescribed, or maybe that I'm not using a connected medical device that my doctor prescribed. I don't want that to go through my get out from my router that's also owned by Amazon to my insurance provider who is now contracted with Amazon's new health division. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're also making me flash on a friend of mine who's a brilliant entrepreneur and engineer here in Jersey. Had a company some years ago that, for a whole different reasons, was tied into your electricity in your house, and every appliance you use has a signature of its electric usage, which is trackable, so you can find out which brand of washing machine and how long it's on and so on and so forth. It's interesting that you get into the full grid of the house. Yeah, and no one's threatening to do that yet, but it could be. Just plugging in your Echo could do that, right? If they wanted to.
You can actually detect, I mean, there's mics in a lot of things now, right? You can actually detect certain appliance brands and things like that just by the sound their motors make. Yeah. So if you think about that, and Kevin and I actually on this week's show, we talk about some disclosures that we think need to start happening. I think, and I'll tie this back to last week when we talked about Nest Secure, basically disclosing to everybody suddenly that they had a microphone in there that you could opt into to have the Google Assistant on it. And everyone was like, what? But I think any device that comes with a microphone or a camera, that should be disclosed in the specs on the box way up front.
And all kinds of sensors. Yes.
Yes. Everything should be up front, because I think it's important to understand, if you're going to connect something, what might be activated. Because there's a lot of sensors in a lot of these products that aren't activated yet. And I don't think people are aware of that. Or you just don't see the data associated with it.
In all honesty, first of all, that's nice. But you have so many devices now in the typical home that they're... You might as well just assume a perfect map is made already of your presence, your things you use, the devices you own. I mean, I think that's you could fairly safely, whether it says it on the box, assume that there's enough devices in certainly your home, Stacey, and my home, that a pretty perfect picture already exists. And I'm actually not worried about what they've done with it up to this point. I'm very worried, though, about once this data is aggregated, what could be done. And it involves kind of envisioning a dystopian future.
It is the panopticon.
But I worry that we're giving, you know, the problem is once if it happens, it's too late. So we're giving him that. I agree with Jeff in the sense that I get benefits from it, and I'm not worried that Amazon knows what kind of washing machine I have. I don't see the harm in that. But I do worry. Well, for instance, if you have an Eero and your mistress has an Eero and you go to her house at a certain time of day and certain time of night, that information is recorded by the Eero and could be aggregated. It's the aggregation that's a problem. And at that point, what is Amazon going to bust me? No, but could it be
sought by authorities? Could your wife's lawyer get that?
There you go. Yeah, possibly. And it's not a defense to say, well, then don't do anything wrong. That's not what we're talking
about.
That's
not what people do.
Yeah. I don't see it an immediate harm. And this is what I always challenged people to, like Dvorak would always, where he was worrying about this 10 years ago. I said, well, what are you worried about? He said, well, the insurance company is going to know you're eating a donut and raise your rates. Those are, to me, almost de minimis, partly because the insurance company isn't going to raise your rates. They're just going to deny you coverage. They ask you this already at the beginning. And if you lie about it and then have a claim, well, now they can just say, well, we're not going to give you any money. So it's not information insurance companies don't already kind of have and collect. I'm much more worried about this kind of, and I can't put my finger on it, but a sort of negative future where all of this information about you is there. I don't know. What is the vision of harm?
There's a couple things here, and I'm just going to tout my show left and right because I had a lawyer on last week's show.
Perfect.
Was what happens when your smart home is issued with a subpoena, and we talked about harms. There's two issues. One is data discrimination. So any sort of behavior that's derived from this data, it's hard to prove harm. Because that harm could come way down the road.
That's what I'm thinking.
The other thing is, it is also hard to prove harm because we don't know how the data influences these algorithms. Currently, a decision could be made about your health insurance cost based on something as esoteric as how many times you open your bathroom door.
That's right.
And you will never know that the bathroom door is why that happened.
Right.
And also, because of that, we don't actually judge. There's not enough scientific actuarial data to say, hey, that bathroom door is a totally reliable indicator of something, right? So there's a lot of stuff we don't know. There's a lot of stuff that's unproven, but is just assumed to be correct, kind of like the 10,000 steps number. That came from a Japanese study that is not like definitive for health, right?
It turns out there's a lot of stuff like that. It's basically made up.
But when we hear the word data, our brain shuts off and says, oh, it's a fact. It's good. Yeah. So those are the kind of issues around harm. And I would say the fact is we'll never know unless like intrepid reporters go out and look at things. Like, I mean, look at the people. I don't know if you remember. Actually, someone in the chat room is pointing out a story about CPAP machines that insurers that were connected in, doctors were sharing data from those connected CPAP machines with insurers, and the insurers were using that data to deny people coverage for that expensive machine based on whether or not they were using it, and some other subtleties that I'm not going to get into. That is a real harm. So, I mean, there are actual harms out there that are existing right now.
Can I turn this around and ask, what do you think Amazon's plans are to use this for products, and what benefits could accrue?
I think Amazon's big plan for this is what it states, which is it wants to understand how people use the home to make the Echo a lot easier to use and to do some cool anticipatory things. So I think that's Amazon's goal here. I think we'll also use the data that it has gathered in its own decision-making processes.
Not just the data. If you tied together, because I think somebody said they were disappointed that the Echo isn't a mesh router itself.
So,
right?
Yeah,
so if you tied together these various technologies, and designed it for now, what, if you're Amazon, what would that look like? And tell me it's not a Fire Phone.
It's not a Fire Phone. I'm just joking. It would be
Amazon's failed product.
It would not be difficult to say, oh, hey, let's just pop a router into every smart speaker.
Or a smart speaker into every router. Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. The challenge is that would raise the price. I mean, the Dot is the best-selling one, and the reason why is it's cheap.
Right.
You also have to think about your, if you add the hardware associated and brains associated with today's mesh routers, you would blow the price of your Echoes out of the water. Google's had this technology. They've had both a smart home hub and a mesh router for a while, and they have yet to consolidate them.
Right.
So imagine if you in your new home in Seattle, you haven't bought one yet, right? Are you going to build one or?
I'm going to rent.
You're going to rent it first, right? So then you find your perfect spot, your perfect lot, and you're going to build the ultimate Stacy house, spelled H-A-U-S. And in every room, there's a box. Maybe it's a remade electric plug. Maybe it's a rethought intercom.
Light switch.
Like we used to have, right? It's a box, right? And it can have incredible functionality in it, right? So what all could be in that, in your rethought home? It could be a router in every room. It could be an Echo in every room. It could be... what else? What is that? If you're Amazon and thinking 5 years down, what does that look like?
So I thought it'd be awesome to have that stuff in the walls, but I changed my mind because I'm going to want to upgrade my router. Right. I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, you just pop it in the light switch. There's power. There's everything. It's perfect. Then I was like, no, I do not want to rip my light switches out every 2 to 3 years when Wi-Fi Alliance changes the Wi-Fi standard. So I think there's going to be an external box that functions as an access point or whatnot. Maybe it's just plugged into the wall. I also think that you're going to see a lot of other devices act as access points, and they'll just be higher end devices, not the cheap stuff. So it's not going to be in your $20 Wyzecam. It's going to be in your, fancy Sonos speakers. We already see this in Lennar and KB Homes are building homes that basically have you've got your electrical cabinet and then you have your IoT cabinet. And in that cabinet, mm-hmm. Everything's wired up. You've got a fancy router. You've got your various hubs that you still need to have for functionality of certain systems. And then, you have Echoes throughout the home as the control medium, or in the case of KB, it's Google. And so I think that's going to be the model for a while. I think we will start seeing things built into the wall. Like my new house will have smart switches already in the wall, right? I would love to see actually air quality monitors in my wall for everything. Uh-huh. I would build my HVAC system to heat and cool certain rooms. Like, so having actual ducts that can, I was like, turn off and on. That's the gesture I'm making here. For individual cooling and heating of different rooms. Let's see. I would love to have presence detection in my room, in my house, but I don't want the presence detection to be sent out to the cloud or another service. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. we've kind of gone past that. And you're going to hate me, but I am reading Shoshana Zuboff's book. It's an excellent book.
Yeah.
And the technology, and I know, Jeff, you're going to roll your eyes. I don't agree with everything, but...
It's called surveillance capitalism, and it. A guest on Triangulation.
Triangulation.
And, her basic tenet is that at this point, it's gotten to the point where these guys are going to have so much information, they can not only predict your behavior, but influence it. And ultimately, that's the harm to both personal sovereignty and democracy.
And it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, that's the thing I took most away from this is we take a lot of this data sharing and aggregation as a matter of fact, but it doesn't actually have to be that way. We could actually buy systems, and you'll see in my recommendation, that don't actually go out to the cloud. So,
I think that's what's going to happen. There was, I think Rene Ritchie said, it's a shame. He was really hoping that Apple would buy Eero. Would mm-hmm. that have been a better outcome?
I you know, the fact that Apple left the field just as, well, actually a couple of years before Wi-Fi started getting hard was inexplicable to me. I really thought that they would use their airport router as a way into the smart home.
They had that opportunity, didn't they?
Yeah, and they didn't do it. And yeah. It was so weird to me.
Yeah.
So weird.
Course, his point would be that we trust Apple. And so Apple could reasonably own Eero, do all these wonderful things, but we wouldn't have to worry about our privacy. I think that may be the way forward, which is some companies that will break the chain.
I don't trust Apple in the smart home in the sense that I don't trust Apple to support a given product over a 10-year lifespan that I might expect.
Well, we know that, but they're better than Google in that regard.
I will say that. I'm like, oh, you know, Apple, you're just, if I put this into my house, now I'm locked in. You're going to screw me over every few years with some weird change. And I don't want to think about my house that much. That's the only thing.
I will grant you that is a potential issue. But I think they might have been a better steward of our privacy.
Oh, yeah. That's because they can make their money so many other ways.
Everybody thinks they're so virtuous. Let's be clear. They couldn't succeed in the ad business, so they didn't have a use for the data. Yes. So they've turned the bug into a feature.
But that's good. Now that's happened.
They're trying to rip off journalists like crazy right now.
Oh, let's do that story. So this is rumor, not fact. But the Wall Street Journal and others are saying that Apple is asking – the Apple, as you know, has Apple News. It's free right now to Apple users. But they're apparently looking – at least two new subscription services. One is a TV service and one is a news service. They bought Texture, another one of our fine sponsors that got acquired by a big company. they bought Texture. And Texture was started by, we should point out, by Hearst, Condi, and I think some others.
Meredith. When it still was made, rest in peace.
The idea was we're going to own our destiny in digital. We'll have a service that you subscribe to. We'll distribute the money. And that way people will still get magazines. And so Texture, and I love Texture. I thought it was a great service. I'm actually very sad that it looks like the end is near. Apple bought it. But now the Wall Street Journal says Apple is going back to those publishers because, by the way, the acquisition of Texture did not mean that they acquired the same rights that Texture had. So they have to renegotiate all these deals. They're going back to publishers. And the rumor is, and I credit it, because obviously these publishers are getting offered these deals and going to the journal and saying, you won't believe what Apple just said. They want 50% and no subscriber data will be passed along. Do you think?
As opposed to, let me just add here, Facebook, which sends people, I believe, I could get this wrong, but I think Facebook sends, helps publications find out who's going to subscribe and sends them to them and takes nothing. And Google, which has said that they're going to take only enough to cover their bare costs, and that's next to nothing.
Yeah. So if that's the case, is that too much to ask?
I think so. I think especially at this time when...
what if they bring them twice as much traffic?
Well, same argument that Google makes, the argument that they'll make.
Yeah. Apple's plan apparently is to charge end users $10 a month and then to divvy up that 50%, keep 50, and divvy up the other 50% among the publishers based on the amount of time. I think this is really interesting, the amount of time users spend reading. So it'll be directly connected to the amount of time they spend reading that content.
So I think there's a few issues with this. And I just wrote a post this week, but I called the you showed it earlier, the scorched earth. And I don't make myself popular with some folks, but I think we've hit we're very near the end of how many paywalls we can have on earth. They're not going to work. There's an interesting,
I would agree with you, by the way. I noticed, and I'm sure our audience also notices that, you know, now that we hit so many of them, I'm saying, okay, Bloomberg, I'll take my 9 articles and keep moving. I'm not going to pay for it.
And there's publications I choose never to link on in case I need that one article.
Right.
My son lives in Boston. I'm interested in Boston.com occasionally, but when I hit the limit, okay, no big deal.
There are a lot of paywalls. You can't even read the content at all.
Right, right. And I was talking to some publishers just today.
Yeah.
Right. I was talking to some publishers just today, and I said, somebody comes and they hit a paywall And that's a potential customer. It's the worst thing you can do to them. You lose them. Yeah. Anyway, the Apple thing, which is the same argument I have against micropayments, which everybody thinks is going to be the messiah that suddenly saves everything. I've had 25 companies come to me saying, I've got it. Micropayments is going to save everything.
So funny. We've been saying that for 20 years at least.
But part of the problem here is that if you are the Wall Street Journal and if you charge $600-$800 a year, and if I can now get articles from the Wall Street Journal on Apple for, you know, pennies, literally, potentially that hurts the Wall Street Journal badly. And so it skews the value in a way that could be additionally harmful. So not only do publishers get pennies, they only get half the pennies. So we'll see. I also wrote, as soon as I saw that story, I wrote to somebody at a big company and somebody at a small company. I said, opportunity for you, undercut Apple, which will happen.
Well, and Apple may also back down. I mean,
I think they will. I think it's a trial balloon.
They're also trying to put together a TV deal, and the journal reports that Netflix has already said under no circumstances, and HBO is saying they don't have HBO yet either. So Apple, by the way, has had this happen from day one. The music industry didn't like them. iTunes eventually had so much clout they had to deal with them.
Right.
But this is they've been trying to put together TV deals, according to reports, for years. So it is an interesting issue. What do you think about Cashmere Hill's attempt to block the Big Five?
Man, I thought that was so almost heroic.
It's painful.
Man, yeah, I was like, good Lord, this person like dragged herself over broken glass to basically do her job.
Well, bravo.
She's an excellent reporter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bravo.
She is.
And she's been on our shows before. We love her. Because this is a really interesting question. Okay, if you don't like the data collection of Amazon, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and Apple, can you use the internet without them?
The answer is basically no.
She couldn't listen to music in her car because her car had Ford's Sync in it, which was based on Microsoft's car platform.
She could listen to the radio. She did say that she was listening to NPR.
She had to listen to the radio. That's
pretty much. I have not done in
savage.
Years.
Savage.
Now, I did have a problem a little bit with her experiment's parameters. So like deciding that in not supporting Amazon, you couldn't deal with companies that were hosted on AWS.
If you hated Amazon and wanted to give them no money
or data.
Right. But you could not boycott something as large as Tyson Food, for example, today, unless you wanted to grow your own. Right. So there are other industries where companies are just as large and we just don't see them. Or like, let's say you hated the, what is it, UU Line or the Koch brothers? I mean, it's hard to boycott their stuff because they're everywhere.
Well, so I don't buy Bounty paper towels.
I do like the Selecta size.
I can't remember is it Brawny? I can't remember which theirs are. But
Bounty or Brawny? I don't know. Anyway, the point here is, I felt
but that's
that
interesting. Of all people, I would have thought you would pay attention to that kind of thing and not buy those products. So you don't bother. You don't try.
It's too hard.
It's too hard.
And it is way too much mental energy. I know.
Well,
I chose to use
Proton Mail, which has its own servers deep within the mountains of Switzerland. And I use, you remember I got that Helm. Which is my own server, my own hard drive. I keep all my data away from Google by doing that. But Helm routes all my server through for AWS instances. So even though it's encrypted. Now, here's a question. It's encrypted. So they're not getting access to any information from me, not even metadata. It's completely encrypted going through there. They're just using their IP address. But I guess indirectly I'm giving them money. So I know Cashmere would not have used it.
Well, I mean, yeah, AWS is it's a lot of the internet.
It's everywhere.
So I don't,
yeah.
But it's also...
Actually, you couldn't watch Twit.
Right? Yeah,
well, let's see.
Right.
You could watch Twit because it goes through Cashfly, but our website goes through AWS, so you couldn't use Twit. You couldn't go to the website. I don't know which podcast apps use AWS, but I bet a lot of them do. How do you even find out? She had a custom-designed router that blocked anything with an Amazon web service's address. So she just, it wouldn't work.
I kind of wonder if like the experiment and that aspect of it was kind of brute force. Like that's the only way. Well, right. That's kind of the only way you could.
Yeah, you have to do it. That. She first tried to use
advertiser. If you had an if you have a given site happened to come across a programmatic advertiser that used either Google or AWS, she blocks that too. So anything that's involved, that's
she couldn't use Dropbox because it's hosted on AWS. She couldn't use DuckDuckGo because it's hosted on AWS. So basically, she had no search engine.
Yeah, so I take your point more, Stacey. Now I see your point better because it kind of stacks the deck in the narrative that they've taken over the world.
And she may have had to choose that because she was using a pretty blunt instrument to avoid it. She probably should have said that.
You know, I think about people who try to use laptops, people in the Free Software Foundation who try to use only free software, not free by no cost, but liberty free. And it's very hard to do. And almost all the Linux laptops out there have, you know, proprietary software or chips, you know, have Intel chips or chips with the Microsoft's trusted platform on there. And there's all sorts of issues. And it becomes very difficult. She ended up using a Purism laptop that's kind of designed. This is almost one of the things she illustrates is you have to be fairly privileged to not use these services.
Yeah.
You have to buy an expensive new laptop. She had bought a Nokia phone because she couldn't use Android or iOS. So she's using a feature phone.
Well, in some of the, I mean, so yes. So there's that aspect. And in the real world, so Uline, the boxes company, if you've ever got a small business, you've gotten the Uline catalog with shipping materials and all this. Every small business and many large businesses buy things that are shipped in their boxes and shipped using their gear. And to me, that's what AWS is. And people hate Uline because
it's
those guys are actually. Yeah, but those guys are huge supporters of crazy right-wing Republicans. So there's a lot of people who are like, I want to boycott this, and they can't. So... That's how I feel like AWS is. And
this is why it's good she did the experiment. She proved that point.
So
I think it's probably good that she tried to be 100% pure because it became really clear how hard that was.
Well, here's an interesting way to turn around to the story we were talking about before. So imagine if either Amazon or Google said F you Europe and literally pulled out every service.
Yeah.
It's not just, I can't search anymore. It's, oh, my God, imagine all the things that wouldn't work.
So this is the thing that's scary. That gives these companies huge power. Political power.
Well, they're not doing a very good job of using it.
I know.
They're losing every battle.
Maybe because they're not being firm enough.
Not being tough. Yeah, yeah. But of course, if they do, they're going to be accused of being countries of themselves and all that.
Then we shut them all down.
It's early. It's 1475. People, we're lucky. We haven't had a 30 years war yet.
We just got
the
freaking Bibles. Come on.
Yeah, jeez. We haven't even invented the title page.
Meanwhile, the New York Police Department says Google and Waze have got to stop sharing our drunk driving checkpoints. I kind of understand their point of view on that.
I do, but I also think that if Google and Waze don't do it, somebody else will.
Yeah.
And this is exactly why. We need a new way of talking and thinking about data sharing around tech. And this type of data sharing can advantage big people and small people. And the ability to like aggregate and search out and then display easily all this crazy information just puts everyone on more even footing. And that's really uncomfortable for a lot of organizations and people.
I love.
So let me ask you another question.
Okay. Let me say one thing. I love the response of Helen Witte, the president of Mothers Against Drunk Driving. She said, I don't care because people who are that inebriated aren't really checking their ways to avoid the mustached cop. If you're impaired, you're not going to pay any attention to that information. She said, in her experience, drunk drivers coming through sobriety checkpoints were often very confused or unaware of what was happening. What's going on? What's happening? Well, who are you? And then other people complained about the image of the police officer on Waze.
I think with the mustache?
Yeah, that's friendly. It's a friendly cop. I don't know.
Now, is that a drunk? Is it always drunk driving, or is it just a cop there?
Popo in general.
We haven't. Do you guys have no refusals?
What?
Do you have those? So on weekends in Texas, on certain like big game weekends or like Thanksgiving, there's checkpoints and there are no refusal checkpoints. So everyone has to breathe into a tube.
No, I think the way it works, at least in Petaluma, actually, there are some issues about DUI checkpoints. In theory, it's fine. In Petaluma, the way it works, they talk to you, and if you seem inebriated, then they may, just as they would if they pulled you over, ask you to walk a straight line, that kind of thing. And ultimately, if they think you're intoxicated, they might ask you to submit. But you can always refuse in California. Then they just take you to the station house and they draw blood. I liked your reaction, Stacey. I think the photographer is done shooting your house. That's the sign. But the reason I
think we know who's boss.
Yeah. The reason I'm not fine of the sobriety checkpoints, at least in our area, is most often who gets pulled over and stopped and eventually their car impounded is illegal aliens. That in fact it nets far more undocumented
people, please.
Yeah, I know you can't say illegal aliens. Undocumented visitors than it does drunk drivers. And I see it's kind of sad. You go by and you'll see all these cars that have been impounded and these poor guys and gals.
Really?
Yeah. They're so anyway, there's another political thing to say. My in-laws would say, and good riddance.
So I got one for you, Stacey and Leo. I think it's an interesting question. So now you have various parties going strong after the platform saying that they should eliminate the dens where anti-vaxxers breed.
That is a really interesting question.
So is that the job? Is that the job of Facebook? Is God knows it's misinformation. God knows it's harmful.
Basically, is it like shouting fire in a crowded theater? Except, is it like shouting fire in a closed loop system?
Especially since we're having measles outbreaks in the Northwest.
Exactly. I mean, these are horrid.
People are actually
ignorant people.
Kids are getting sick. Some are dying because of this.
But is it Facebook's job to do that?
Wow, I'd say no.
But you see.
I'm thinking about this.
That takes all the fun out of it, Stacey. What do you think first? Jeez.
We need hot takes, Stacey. Hot takes.
Yeah, exactly.
Silly me trying to get a considered opinion here.
I know.
Okay. So I'm thinking about it from a public health standpoint. It is obviously detrimental to have these closed groups, and it is easier to share them and spread them. It's unlike in physical meetings, so it's much easier. So is it closer to basically shouting fire in a crowded theater is the question we'd have to come up with. Does that make sense? Because that would be the argument that I would use if I said you should shut it down.
And that line refers back to, I don't know if it was a Felix Frankfurter, a Supreme Court decision about free speech that limited free speech only to cases where it's all right to abridge free speech in a case where it endangers lives.
Right.
And the example he gave was shouting fire in a crowded theater. So
thank you, Leo.
If it endangered, well, maybe I didn't even need to give you that gloss, but just.
No, that was hell. I was like, I did not have the reference point in front of me to explain all of that. So go you with doing it.
Yeah.
So that is the question is it that big of an endangerment for public welfare?
That was Justice Holmes. I apologize. Let's give him credit.
So yes. So that's what I'm trying to think through, Jeff. And I don't.
So here's Stacey. What I think, if you're Facebook and you face something similar in the Czech Republic, right? What you're going to try, what you're going to hope to say is, government, you tell me what to do. If it's against the law, I'll do it. If it's not, I'm leaving it, right? Because that's what we do. That's our policy here. So in essence, but we don't want the government I think, to outlaw even the First Amendment protects lies. The First Amendment protects mistakes. First Amendment protects bad speech.
Actually, and I'm reading an article, it does not. According to the Washington Post, knowingly false statements of fact are often constitutionally unprotected.
In instances of
libel, fraud, perjury.
Right, where there is other law.
Or Oliver Wendell Holmes saying the most stringent protection of free speech would not protect a man in falsely, that's the important word there, shouting fire in a theater and causing panic.
Yeah.
So falsely is important. If it's false and it causes harm, it may not be constitutionally protected.
But then we end up in a case where do we want Facebook and Twitter to decide what's false and true? Do we want them to pre-moderate everything that we all want to say? You know, 11 and 13 were bad. This is worse in a lot of ways.
Okay, so I'm not arguing the alternative.
I think the anti-vaxxers are awful, but I don't know what to do.
Here's maybe a way out of it, or maybe a thing that could happen. Let's say my child gets the measles and as a result of it is deaf for the rest of her life, and she was hearing. And I view that as a harm. I could actually go after Facebook if I could, because that is a tort situation where I could demonstrate harm. If I could demonstrate it directly back to that group, like let's say my best friend didn't vaccinate their child, that's who I got it from, and it was because of that group, and I could find enough other people, you could get a class action or you could get a significant enough lawsuit that Facebook would then have to act to protect its own economic interests to avoid getting sued for something like that, right? I could say that it is a place that coddled that group or made it possible for my child to get this disease that harmed her, and thus I'm suing. So that's one way we could go after it without the government technically going after it, but the government would be, as part of the lawsuit, we would be invoking the laws of this country, if that makes sense.
Incidentally, I'm really going down this rabbit hole. There does seem to be quite an important distinction between deliberately lying and unknowingly lying.
Yes.
And this goes back to the very famous Stolen Valor case of 2012. This is fast. I would hate being a lawyer, but I love the law. This is a case where a guy had a habit of lying. He said he played hockey for the Detroit Red Wings. He married a starlet from Mexico. But when he announced he had falsely held the Congressional Medal of Honor, he violated a federal criminal statute, the Stolen Valor Act of 2005. And knowingly is the key here, you know, that he not what was the final decision? That's the question. I have to read this whole thing to find out what the court held on this. Do you know, Karsten, you went to Harvard.
You actually read things unlike us.
Was it Harvard Law School?
No. But I figure Harvard's Harvard, right?
If he went to Harvard Law School, would he be working with us? He'd be rich, I tell you.
The judgment of the court is affirmed. The nation well knows, this is Justice Roberts writing, this is only in 2012, the nation well knows that one of the costs of the First Amendment is that it protects the speech we detest as well as the speech we embrace. Though few might find the respondent's statements anything but contemptible, his right to make these statements is protected by the Constitution's guarantee of freedom of speech and protection. The Stolen Valor Act infringes upon free speech. It's overturned.
Yeah, what's interesting about this, I'm going to give you another law case right now.
They did not prove harm.
They did not prove harm, is that why?
Yes.
Okay.
That should be the theme of this show, all the proving of harm.
Yeah, well, that's a very important legal standard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's you can't say, well, it's just wrong. You have to show harm.
You can't say it could happen.
Right.
I'm going to say this is related.
Did you know that off the top of your head, Karsten?
I Google very quickly.
Okay, I was going to be very impressed.
If you were in France, you'd still be asking what happened because you couldn't get to Google.
So in
the case of the Bezos National Enquirer, a fair number of legal pundits on the air were saying, well, I don't know if you can actually charge bribery and extortion in this case because they didn't ask for money. So one of the great things about being in a green room at MSNBC is I get to ask the lawyers their questions. So Chuck Rosenberg, who I think is phenomenal. And I said, explain this to me, counselor. And he's a former U.S. attorney prosecutor. And he said, well, actually, so the problem is that the bribery extortion definition of value, stealing value, is limited. But he said in the stealing government property statute, there's a broader definition of value, and it includes intangible things. So by seeking to get Jeff Bezos to give up the journalistic value of the Washington Post, was AMI trying to extort value out of him?
Interesting.
Right? Which really, so it's the same as stolen valor in a way, that notion of stealing valor
right.
and thus value. I mean, you're right. I'm glad I was going to go to law school too. I'm very glad I didn't. I would have a real tough time saying, yes, Your Honor. It would not work well.
I'd
be under contempt all the time.
Yeah. I'm warning you, Mr. Jarvis. One more outburst in this court. Let's take a little break. When we come back, our Google change log. Of course, we have our picks.
Oh, you warned Karsten. That's no fun. Now he's going to be ready.
Oh, with a button?
That's no fun.
I'll throw in something to distract him. We all know how important VPNs are, right? If you don't, a VPN, a virtual private network, encrypts your traffic from your device, your phone, your computer, through the internet service provider, through the carrier, past the guy in the hoodie in the corner of the coffee shop, out into the world, to the VPN server, and then and to the public. It's a great way to protect your privacy and security when you're online. Lots of people don't want to know their internet service provider to know what they're up to. They don't, for good reason. Nowadays, we know that our carriers are selling our information just to anybody, including bounty hunters. If you don't want Dog the Bounty Hunter to know what you're up to, a VPN is a great choice. But choosing the right VPN is very important. There are bad VPNs, virtual private networks out there. There are VPNs, for instance, that spy on you and sell that information. Yes. There are VPNs that insert ads into your VPN stream. I use ExpressVPN because I can trust it. It's the number one VPN service, and it's not just me saying so. TechRadar, lots of users voting. This is the one. ExpressVPN, no logging. They don't track anything you're doing. They don't save any information about what you're doing online. They are very fast. This is the other thing. A VPN can slow you down if they don't have enough servers, enough bandwidth. ExpressVPN does. In fact, they have servers in 160 locations. There's a list on the website just all over the world. There's another benefit to that because you technically don't emerge into the public internet until you come out of their VPN server, which means you could be in England, you could be in Singapore, you could be anywhere in the world. That's really awesome. No more geographic restrictions. And the speeds are fantastic. No compromises to be secure. That's important too. Apps for Windows, Macintosh, iOS, and Android. One-click apps too. You push a button, you're secure. So it's very easy to turn it on whenever you need it, turn it off when you don't. And it's less than $7 a month. It is exactly what you've been looking for. Look no farther than expressvpn.com/twig. Don't forget, 30-day money-back guarantee. If any of this doesn't work for you, no problem, no hassle. You're never going to need it, though, I can tell you right now. expressvpn.com/twig. You're going to get 3 extra months when you sign up for a year. Get the one-year plan, which is a very good deal as a result, and you'll get an extra 3 months, which make it even better. expressvpn.com/twig. expressvpn.com/twig. Oh, we have so many fun stories. I don't even know where to go next on this one. Amazon launching a private label cosmetic. Oh, my God. He surprised me.
You will do the change log.
Investing.
Thank you, Karsten. Well done.
I tried to trick him. He tricked me. I was going to say, I don't know what we should do next. Maybe we should do the changelog. But no, he was not fooled.
Well done, Karsten.
Sundar Pichai in the Google keyword blog. You don't see a lot of posts from Pichai in the keyword blog. In this case, investing across the U.S. in 2019. Sundar starts, 1 year ago this week, I was in Montgomery County, Tennessee to break data. He is. Look at this. 2019 Google offices and data centers. New developments circled, existing developments, blue dots. It's all over the place.
24 states. They're going to have offices.
Wow.
And facilities.
Are offices mostly sales offices?
No, they spread development around to a lot of offices. I mean, obviously, New York is huge. Boston is huge. Chicago has lots of development. No, they put development in a lot. I think Austin does, I think. Right, Stacey?
Yeah, they've got two big buildings.
Because they also want to grab college talent.
Right.
From, I think, where's Carnegie Mellon? Whatchamacallit? Help me out here.
Pittsburgh,
thank you. Harvard man knows it all. Who needs Wiki? See, you live in Europe. Wikipedia is gone. Google's gone.
Get yourself
gone.
A Harvard man.
You got Karsten.
Get yourself a Harvard man. That's my motto.
So I think it's sales, development. Plus, I wonder where they're putting their customer service back office phone stuff and FI offices and all that kind of stuff.
$13 billion in investment through the year, data centers and offices across the U.S., major expansions in 14 states, 10,000 new construction jobs in Nebraska, Nevada, Ohio, Texas, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Virginia. As you said, 24 states, data centers in 13 communities.
Data centers don't create a lot of jobs once the construction's done, do they?
No. There's some good IT jobs there, but that's about it. And the robots love them. 2019 marks the second year in a row Google will be growing faster outside of the Bay Area than inside it.
Good.
Do you think that's a response to Amazon planting the story that now that New Yorkers are being such jerks about it, maybe they won't put their headquarters in Queens?
No. I mean, I think it's definitely a refutation of Amazon's, quote, HQ2 kind of debacle.
It's getting worse.
That is. Well, Amazon, I'm going to say it right now. I mean this. Amazon, you could be in heaven, move across the river to Newark, New Jersey. Newark, I'm serious.
It's
Newark
true.
Needs you.
They need
it
you.
Has the facilities. You would make a real difference there rather than New York City, though I love New York City too. Audible is already headquartered there.
There's a great airport there.
All the same facilities and efforts. It's far better. Just move across the river, and we will embrace you in New Jersey.
Take the path. You'll be in town in minutes.
You're right there. Path or NJ Transit. Either one takes you in. It's fine.
I will say Google's move is smart because it puts them across larger number of congressional districts.
Oh.
True that.
Ooh, that is smart. Why give them lobbying money when you can give them jobs?
I mean, that would be something to think about, I would think, if I were
It'd be
a forward
really
looking
interesting,
company.
Stacey, to take that map and put it against Trump districts.
Ooh,
didn't look like it was very Trumpy. I could be wrong.
The places that tend to be Trumpy are probably not the places that Amazon would go. Google would go.
Oh, for HQ2. Well, no, Google would for a data center. Your remote is fine.
And Amazon would for a warehouse.
Is Texas not a blue state?
So
a red
it
state,
is not.
I mean, a red state. I get those
it
colors confused.
For the
My colors
time,
actually
Google
run.
Google didn't have operations. They had very tiny operations because, was it Sergey or Larry, hated Texas because it was a backwards red state. Yeah, it was a very big deal when
That's
Google
mean.
Opened back up in Texas again. So
three Googlers. Three are nominated for Oscars, actually won them. These are the technical Oscars. Of course, they don't get the TV exposure.
Not even.
Leo, you could host the technical Oscars. Do a deal and then bring those people on the show. That would be so cool.
I would love to do that.
Yeah. Call up whoever
Paul Debevec, Shui Ming Yu, and Wan Chun, Alex Ma. And Timothy Hawkins, Scientific and Technical Achievement Awards for their work at the Institute for Creative Technologies, USC. That's where they worked before they went to Google. Actually, Debevec is still an adjunct professor there. They created the Light Stage. This is pretty cool looking. And it's software which captures 3D models of an actor's face for visual effects. That's Zoe Saldana. doing her character in Avatar, so she could do all the acting in that light stage. It's pretty cool.
Creepy.
Pretty cool.
Oh, I knew you were gonna say that.
It is creepy. Those faces.
Look at here's the Blade Runner 2049 visual effects using the light stage, because as you may know, some of the characters in Blade Runner are a little older than they appear on screen. They got to figure out a way to make them look young again. And she looks exactly as she did in the original movie. Harrison looks a little older, but see, because androids don't age. So she actually looks. See, you can't cross the creepy line with an android because they're already creepy. They're androids. Yeah.
Harrison Ford's an android too.
Shut up! Spoiler alert! That's a big one. Big one. Big spoiler.
Karsten.
Big fat spoiler. You Harvard
he
guys.
He just got you back for the
think
change log,
you're so
man.
Smart. By the way, that is up for debate. I don't think it's clear.
It's canon.
Okay, we got to stay it's focused, canon? You guys, because
I know you want to get this over with.
It's getting there.
Encryption for everyone. Dinner. This we talked about extensively on Security
going for
Now.
A new record, Stacey.
No,
stay in there.
I didn't know. I didn't know what this was. Adiantum is a kind of. I'll leave this to Steve to explain, but clever crypto technique. Using a cryptography algorithm called cha-cha-cha, ha-ha-ha, and it will make it easier to do encrypted devices for lower-end Android devices without built-in encryption hardware. So that's very good. And they named it Adiantum, which is a maidenhair fern. No reasons
yeah, okay.
were given.
Sure.
Okay, you named your technology after a maidenhair firm. Yeah, you got a problem with that?
It sounds like adamantium.
That's what my conjecture yesterday at Security Now was they wanted adamantium, but they couldn't get it. So they said, we'll take out a couple of letters. We'll call it that. Google is adding a add to waitlist feature for restaurants. It's provided by Dine Time. As part of Reserve by Google. I didn't know Reserve was a Google app.
I didn't know any of that.
I use Reserve because not everybody is OpenTable. Reserve with Google, which launched in 2016, allows users to book and pay for reservations without leave. Oh, this is not the Reserve app, or maybe it is, but this is built into the Google search. So you can make I didn't know this, but you can make a reservation in Google search, and now you can put yourself on a wait list if... as is apparently the case, the Red Lobster in your neighborhood is booked. I didn't even know you can make reservations at Red Lobster. So that just shows you what I know. This is the Times Square Red Lobster. So now you can add your name to the list. Are you excited? Not Matt.
No.
Not me. Yeah. You can Best Buy is now selling Google Fi data. Phone SIMs, not data SIMs, phone SIMs for $10, but you get $10 credit on Google Fi. So if you need a SIM card for your, Google Fi,
I wonder what the other carriers think about it, because they've got major investments in Best Buy.
Absolutely.
Verizon and AT&T and so on and the whole Magilla. And they're like, I'll take that phone and that card. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Ooh, that would be bad. I guess that's the idea, right?
That's what competition does.
Yay.
It's great.
Yep, I'm happy about it. Yep. I imagine they're not, but I am. Yeah.
There's a new encryption. There's a new API for automating Google Docs. This sounds really cool.
Yeah, I found this one interesting. Things like invoicing, things you do over and over and over again.
Yeah.
It's just an action.
Well, you'd want somebody to write it, unless you're a developer, but... developers can use the API to create tools that automatically do anything, almost anything you would do with a document, including reading and editing existing docs, creating entirely new ones, lists, tables, images, all accessible. This is something Apple does really well with their Automator and AppleScript in apps on macOS. But I think this is a great thing to have in the cloud.
Way back in the day, I used to do mail merge.
Right. Right. It is a RESTful API. if that makes you happy. And that's that story. And that, I believe.
No.
You're just trying to screw with Karsten here, Stacey. That wasn't nice.
Sorry, Karsten. I just got a text from Kevin who's like, OMG, how can there be nothing on the changelog about Chrome OS 72?
He has gone on and on in his website, his lovely website, which is called
About Chromebooks.
Yeah.
But he told me two features, one of which, Jeff, you're going to super appreciate. So the first one that nobody, I'm like, it's cool. He has picture-in-picture now for Twig on the Pixel Slate, so that's cool. And then he is also excited because you can download, hold on, I got to do this right.
Android movies and music to an SD card.
There you go.
Oh.
This was your big complaint, Jeff, and now it is solved. And you can put it on a USB stick for you with your Pixel Slate.
And that's good because most Chromebooks don't have much storage, so you don't really want to fill up your limited storage.
I've got plenty. So the advantage of that is that I can move the movie from one place to another?
Yeah, or you could just not fill up your internal storage. Okay. You could just put movies on a USB card.
For like when you're on a plane and you don't have a connection to the internet?
There you go.
Right, but I download that now onto my machine.
He just puts it on the machine. But, you know, there are a lot of Chromebooks with 16 gigs of storage.
Yeah, I have like
you have
Kevin,
64, right?
We're much.
Yeah, that won't get you across an ocean.
No,
not in HD anyway.
Now, go into Chrome OS settings, navigate to the Play Store option, then choose Manage Android Preferences. For some reason, this opens the Android settings app, just like on the Android phone. From there, you choose App and Notifications, select Google Play Movies, and the Permissions option. Enable the storage permission, and you'll get a pop-up from now on when you download. Choose download storage, internal or SD card.
Cool.
But you know what? That was a lot of words. Just go to the fabulous about Chromebooks.com.
Fabulous. So I have an oddity, Kevin, since you're watching. I have an oddity that, and this happens to me all the time because I'm on planes, that for certain domains, not all, like my school domain is fine all the time, but certain domains, like going to United, and I go to the United Club or I go on the United plane, my Chromebook will not see the domain because it's knew it in another life. And I can't get in there to forget it. I can't get anything. I have to restart the machine for it to recognize the domain is there, and then it will lurch on, which doesn't sound that bad, except that when I'm in the air and I'm trying to connect to the Wi-Fi, oy, did I have a problem.
Oy, gavay.
This is a conversation we need to have, Kevin, so I can figure out what I'm doing wrong.
He is typing, and he has no idea how to fix your issue, but he's going to look into it.
You failed me, Kevin, but no, you won't.
No, he's looking into it.
Nothing better than that. Nothing better than that.
There you go. Okay.
And
Thank you, Kevin.
I feel like I was just possessed by the spirit of Kevin Toefel, and now I'm going to let his spirit leave my body.
And the virtue of the Chromebook comes down upon you.
Exactly.
It's the virtue of the Chromebook. Speaking of, this shouldn't be in the Google changelog, but I'm putting it there anyway. Samsung has started taking reservations for the Galaxy 10 on their website. And the only reason I mention that is because 1 week from today, in 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, Samsung is going to have its big Galaxy 10 unveil, and we will stream it live right here.
So you can order it before it's unveiled. You can reserve it before it's unveiled.
Yeah, I don't know what that gets you.
I think rather than playing this race, so much faith in you.
Well, I'm going to buy it.
You can always cancel.
It says you'll save up to $550 when you trade in an eligible device. Delivery by, and this is actually news, March 8th. So we now know that March 8th, these Galaxies will arrive. And you get it first with early access to pre-order by doing what I just did. Oh, and I get a $50 instant credit on accessories. Ooh. So thought I'd mention that. And we will be covering that stream. What we're going to do is move Windows Weekly to 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern next Wednesday. We'll do the Samsung event. And right after, This Week in Google, next Wednesday. And I'm sure we'll be talking about
that. Will we start before 6?
Yes. Promise.
This affects us. I'm dozing off here.
Not really.
No. Okay.
No, because they start at 11. If they're not, they don't. They'll be done by noon. In fact, if you want, we could start early next week. How about that?
I don't know.
Well, we'll be in touch. And that concludes the Google changelog. What? No? A dissenting voice?
No? I didn't know this time.
Did you?
I didn't
Jeff,
do my
Jeff made
Batman.
A funny sound. I don't know.
No.
He just went, but, okay.
This show is a lot
of funny. I was delighted
nonsense.
That we were there.
We are there, and now we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will wrap this show up, Stacey. I know you're starving.
It's true.
We will wrap this show up with a fine breakfast taco. No, I didn't mean to do that.
That was cruel.
With a fine queso
so dip. Stop.
By the way, did Chipotle change the queso?
Oh, I haven't.
I haven't been there
so
a long time.
Romanian.
I was there. It looked different.
I think we have a show title. I don't know. After you said that, I never ordered it again. That was it.
Well,
yeah, I order my queso from reputable queso shops.
Thank you. What's the best queso in Austin?
Oh, it's a running debate. We actually have there are articles about this. Like our actual newspaper does.
Of course,
articles.
Yeah, the Austin Statesman.
Oh, and I'm hungry during Twig because it's like 6 o'clock, which is like dinner
it's
time.
It's worse than that. But it's 7:12. Yeah, 7:12.
Yeah, but it also comes in my 4 o'clock snack time. That's why.
Well, get a snack for crying out loud while I do this ad.
Okay, there we go. Well, we're almost done. All right.
We're almost done. I want you to be calm.
Famous last words, Stacey. Famous last words.
I want you to be calm because our advertisement today is from Calm.com, the number one app for I'm sorry, I didn't mean to raise my voice, but I was excited. The number one app for meditation and sleep and a lot more. It is a really nice way to bring yourself some peace this new year. Reset, establish new habits for your happiest, healthiest self. We're all eating better this year and joining gyms, but what about your mental health? What about Calm? Calm is awesome. App of the year 2017, according to Apple, best of 18, Apple as well. If you head to calm.com/twig, 25%. What do you get? 25% off a Calm premium membership. You get the daily Calm every day. You get 100+ guided meditations covering all aspects of our modern lives, like anxiety and focus and stress and sleep and even relationships. You also get Matthew McConaughey. Yes, you do. Matthew reads sleep stories. They're actually sleep stories from Bob Ross. We were listening to a beautiful sleep story. Lisa and I love this. We listen to sleep stories. She'll put it on, and when we go to bed, she says, "You want a sleep story?" I say, "Yes, but not Matthew tonight. It's too exciting." Sleep stories from Bob Ross, from lots of voices. What were we listening to? It was so beautiful. I don't know. I fell asleep. They're not too engaging, just a little engaging. if you were too engaging, you wouldn't maybe fall asleep. You can go to the Lavender Fields of France with Stephen Fry, explore New Zealand with Jerome Flynn from Game of Thrones. That's what we were listening to. Oh, that was so beautiful. I learned so much, and I never got to the end. Soothing music, too. Breathing exercises, gentle stretches to relax your body. This actually is an important part of your overall health. This calm body is new. These are 10-minute guided video lessons on mindful movement, gentle stretching. I'm so big for me. I'm doing these. I love them. You're going to love Calm. I want you to go to calm.com/twig. And if you do, you'll get 25% off a Calm premium subscription. It's available on iOS, but also available on Android. It's a beautiful app, a wonderful app. You're going to love it. Calm.com/twig. Calm. calm.com/twig. I love that. I love it. I feel better already just talking about it.
So you need to do this before you need to do the Calm commercial before you do your Facebook discussions.
I think it would just calm us all down if from now on I would just, do that. It's very relaxing. Stacey, hi. Oh, she's so calm.
Wake up, Stacey.
Nothing's coming out of her mouth. She's just moving her
head. Oh, sorry. I was muted. I was saying hello.
Hello.
I'm here.
You could do this.
Ready to tell you about my choice.
Oh, I wish you, please hire Stacy. She would be, oh, you have such a nice voice. You'd be great for that.
I get too excited about things.
I know.
I'd be like, hello. Oh my God, y'all. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
I like it. For maybe for April Fool's.
There, that's true. There you go. You're like, Stacy's so chill. No, she's not. Okay, my thing for this week is our review. I'm shameless self-promotion this week of the Hubitat, which is a privacy-centric smart hub, smart home hub with all the radios you need.
I love the name Hubitat.
Yeah. Now, Kevin did the review because I'm leaving and I can't install crazy stuff at the moment. But the important thing to note that Kevin is a very generous reviewer and he hated this hub for anyone who was not a diehard user of home automation software. So many of your audience will appreciate this hub. It does not have a native app. Or it does not have an app at all. It's basically you interact with it through a web browser.
Oh, like the old days. That's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
No, but it is not for, you know, your person who does not want to spend hours programming a light switch to turn on and off when you hit a button.
Oh, no,
right?
That's our audience. You're right.
That's why I was like, oh, they will love this hub.
Yeah.
And what it does is it keeps everything local. So if your internet goes out, you still have all your automations. All your data from your devices stays on the hub. You actually do go out to AWS for the login. So if you're Cashmere Hill, you're not going to like that. But for everyone else, this is a very privacy-focused hub. And it's only $100, which is not a lot to spend.
Nice. Very nice.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
I like it.
It is a wonderful hub. I highly recommend that everyone choose it.
It's a beautiful, beautiful hub.
You've hypnotized me into buying it.
Not you, Jeff. Don't buy this. You will hate it. It will give you a heart attack. Please do not buy it.
It's too much for you, Jeff. You're just not ready for it.
Oh.
Someday, perhaps.
I think the frustration would really just drive you nuts.
Let's listen to it.
No!
Oh, no. Hey. No. Jeff, listen. Listen, little Bob Ross. It's gonna calm you down.
Oh, my nephew's having a Bob Ross birthday party.
You're kidding. How old is your nephew?
Oh, wow.
He's 8. He's the quirkiest kid. I love him to death.
Hello, I'm Bob Ross, and I'd like to welcome you to the
20th Joy Bob Ross for Halloween series.
You're kidding. He's an 8-year-old Bob Ross fan?
I'd like to thank you. Yes, it's adorable.
That's kind of great.
Another series of painting shows. If this is your first time with us, let me extend a personal invitation for you to drag out your brushes and your...
He's a little hyped. He's a little hyped up. Bob is. He's a little overexcited right now.
A happy little pitcher today. So let me tell you what I've done.
A happy little pitcher.
Jeff Jarvis, a number, please.
Well, I was going to do this because this morning, I went to my calendar on Google and everything was an hour off.
What?
And then I looked at my clock, which has automatic daylight savings, and it already hit daylight savings time and it was an hour off. And I went online and somebody said, yeah, that happened to me in Australia last week and somebody else said it happened to me in Europe. But I think maybe it was just craziness. That's not my number. Unless any of you out there found that you also had an hour off today, what happens to the world when Google changes
the time? I'll give you a time check. It's 4:20.
So here's my number.
Thanks,
here's my
Elon.
Number. A tribute to, this is very sad. This makes me extremely sad, but also very grateful for all we got out of it.
Yes.
Opportunity Rover died.
Oh, the end of the line for the longest living Mars rover.
Leo has on his screen, does, a magnificent Times graphic that shows the full route of the rover.
Oh.
If you go through scroll, you'll see that it went something like 26 miles. Keep going.
She was a beauty.
Landed in the Eagle Crater, and then you see how Opportunity meandered around Mars.
Saving the world for us.
Yeah. Found evidence of water.
That's really nice.
And left something for the Martian to be able to get back to Earth.
Oh, really?
Was it Opportunity?
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Was it?
In The Martian, he went and got a nuclear reactor from one of the old rovers. I don't think it was. Was it Opportunity?
No.
I don't think it was.
Well, he got
curiosity. Opportunity died because it doesn't have a...
Right. If it had only had
Harvard does it again. Again.
Well, actually, that was curiosity.
That's all I could do is mock
him. That was jealous.
All
that
I could do jealous. Is mock his superior brain. Well,
and
I'm
there
gonna,
is its final resting spot.
I want to. We were talking about my
Perseverance
blog.
Valley.
Perseverance Valley.
She persevered.
Oh. We were talking about my my blog, and I don't know if anybody's noticed this, but of late there's been this big button showing up on my blog that will read the post.
I was so excited when we launched the new Screensavers 3.5 years ago. Since then, it's been one of my favorite shows in our...
Now, I know people who have accessibility issues probably already have a screen reader, and so maybe, I don't know, you tell me, is this a bad idea or not? But this is a easy-to-install plugin. Doesn't work well with pictures. But it will read your posts in a... You could choose the voice, male or a female voice. It's really, I think, kind of an interesting thing to have on your blog, and it's easy to install. This is a WordPress blog, so I just added a block. Actually, I could... Let me log into my WordPress account, and I will show you. So what you do, it's a really simple thing to do. Let's see if WordPress lets me log in. Sometimes they require me to answer an email. Nope, good, let me log in. So if I go to my site, and I go to customize. Oh, now it wants me to log in again. Oh, this is the two-factor.
You see, if Hank Green were doing this, he'd have a jump cut now.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't...
I can jump right now.
I don't do... You just want to jump over to that queso. I know what you're doing.
I am.
What are you having for dinner tonight, Stacey?
My husband made beef stew.
Oh,
I'm not a stew fan.
Not really.
I love stew.
Well,
also, I tried love to anything for you there, boss.
I don't have the right phone with
him. I haven't made anything for myself apart from anything in years. The other night, I made cacio e pepe.
Ooh, yum.
Oh, that's not hard.
Love that. Well,
but it is good.
What is cacio e pepe? Sorry. Tell me.
It's just pasta and cheese and pepper.
Garlic.
It is. Oh. It is. No garlic. No, don't dare.
You don't put garlic in yours?
No. Simplicity. It's the calm of pastas. It's macaroni and cheese for grown-ups.
Okay.
It's excellent. Oh, it's wonderful.
Sounds delicious.
Love cacio e pepe.
Sounds like a treat.
Have you done it yet, Leo? We're trying to vamp for you here.
No, I don't have the phone with the authenticator on it, so I can't go in there.
God bless
Never
security.
Mind. Forget
Never
I
mind.
Forget I even said anything. I'll point you to the website. That's probably the... Oh, wait a minute. I thought I did have
let's
the...
Do that.
Yeah, I'll point
no,
you
no,
the,
let's just tell us the website so we can go. No, let's focus.
Well, okay, but now I got to find the website. It'll be a minute or two. Hold on just a second here. This wasn't as well prepared as I thought it would be.
No, really?
What if we just show them instead how to blur our backgrounds on Skype?
Ooh!
There it is. Is that it? No, that's a plug-in. This one is I wanted to mention this because it's really...
It looks very cool. Like, I would like to add something like that.
And it's kind of... It's kind of feel like...
Stacey, do it now. Do it now.
I feel like it's kind of like a nice contribution to, but I can't remember where it is, and now I forget it. I
shouldn't get credit for this because Stacy's the one who figured out how to do it.
How to do what? Leave?
What were you doing?
Oh, what the hell? Stacy, you look so romantic. Stacy has turned on a feature that is now available in Skype. If you have the latest version on Windows or she's on Mac, it doesn't work all that well. Look at her microphone. Jeff, it looks a little bit better.
But I'm still pink.
Yeah, and if you move, like it's like you're erasing the blur with your head, and it comes back later. That is wild. That is truly, truly wild.
So it blurs everything but the human being, you audio people. See what you're missing is...
Yeah, no, you're not actually audio people. Guess what? You are really not missing anything. Yeah, you are not. This is...
Stacey, you're muted.
So I will show you real quickly. Oh. That stalling has given me the moment I needed to find websitevoice.com, which is a free service that will put that little bug on your website, and it's really easy to add. You just copy the embed and install it. You have to register your website with them, and I think it's really nice. Now, you're putting a plug-in on your site. That means they're going to know who's visiting your site, so you might want to think about that, but it supports Spanish, German, Japanese, French, Norwegian, Korean, many, many voices. You can customize it very easily, and it's very easily installed. At least on a WordPress site, it took me literally about a minute. So websitevoice.com. You can see the customization thing right here. Ladies and gentlemen, blurry or not, we have come to the end. It's queso time. Come to the end of the show, and Stacey couldn't be happier.
Stacey is stewing.
She is so happy. Stu is waiting. Stacey Higginbotham is at StaceyOnIoT.com. She does a great podcast with Kevin Toefel about the Internet of Things. She's at GigaStacey on Twitter, and she is a much appreciated regular on this show, as is our friend Jeff Jarvis, who's been here since the very beginning.
How many episodes now?
495.
Oh, we're gonna have a party at 500?
Yeah, we're getting close to 10 years.
Jesus, are you serious?
Yeah. Isn't that a wild thing? Isn't that hard to believe?
Oh, you sick of me yet, boss?
Oh, not at all. You know, we had Gina Trapani on Twit on Sunday.
I know. I haven't watched it yet. I want to watch it. Was Gina and Matt and...
Matt Cutts and then Dwight Silverman from the Houston Chronicle. It was such a great show. And Matt's an old-timer on this show, too. Yeah. By the way, now officially administrator, no longer acting administrator.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Officially administrator at the U.S. Digital Services. Our 10th anniversary... This Week in Google is August 1st, Jeff. So get ready for a party. And it was you and Gina and me and nothing and a dog named Corgi. No. Thank you, Stacey. Go away. Go. Please go. Everybody go home and have dinner. We're done here. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Stacey. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. That's 2130 UTC. You can watch it live, twit.tv/live, audio and video, so you can listen live too. Or download a copy of the show. Going all the way back to episode one, just go to twit.tv/twig. To episode one is twit.tv/twig1. And then episode two is twit.tv/twig2, and on and on and on. Of course, we didn't have video in those days. It was audio only. But we did have the same lame music beginning the show, so you'll be glad to hear the piper piping in This Week in Google. Subscribe in your favorite podcast application. That way you'll get it every week the minute it's available. I am Leo Laporte. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Now go have some queso. Bye-bye.